Hello everyone, you are listening to Studying Pixels, a Christmassy podcast on game studies and video game culture. I'm Stefan Heinrich Simond, a game studies scholar from Germany.
I'm Dan Hughes, a Japanese scholar from Texas.
And you can find us every Sunday on studyingpixels.com and wherever you get your podcasts. It is time for Christmas, and I must say, I love it. I love Christmas. Yes. I know it's commercialized. I know I shouldn't, but I can't help to get excited when I have a tiny present in front of me, or a big present, ideally. And I get to unwrap it and be excited about it. It just awakes a kind of childish joy within me.
Well, commercialized though it may be, I think that it's definitely my favorite time of year because kindness does seem to bubble over with people, at least here in the States. So it's a nice month and a half chunk of people being kinder to one another.
Oh, it's like 1 month and a half?
Ah, Stefan, yes. Christmas in America starts really before Halloween, I would say.
Oh, wow. Well, 1 month and a half of kindness is actually quite a luxurious thing because in Germany, people are kind on like 2 days. It's like everything back to normal.
Very economical with the kindness.
Yeah, we can't afford all these lights all the time. We're wasting energy.
But no, it is definitely, I would say, one of my favorite times of year. And I think video games play a big part in that, for sure. So I hope that everybody out there is having a Merry Christmas or a Happy Holiday around this time and enjoying time with your family or your friends or playing some great games.
Yeah, or listening to some Studying Pixels, because we are also very much trying to make Christmas a wonderful time for you. We've already given away a PlayStation 5 earlier. It should have arrived by now, so that we're actually pre-recording this a little bit, so it's not Christmas as the time of recording, but it will be Christmas by the time this episode airs. And we also thought we'd just do a little bit of a special episode where we don't do any side quests, but we get into a little bit of a review of the year that happened and a look forward to the year that's going to come. Because actually, we're going to take next week off. So New Year's, we will take a break as well in order to chill and spend some time with friends and family. So this will be our last episode for this year. And what an incredible year it actually was. If I think, imagine, this is now our 14th episode. We've just launched Studying Pixels in the latter half of 2021. And it is such an amazing and such a fun project. I really love doing this here with you.
Yes. Well, the feeling's very mutual. I think it's been, I say this as a compliment, where even though, so we're on the 14th episode, it feels as if we just started and that we've been doing this for a very long time all at once.
Yeah, the groove is definitely there. The groove is there. And I think probably people can also notice that this is not the first podcasting project that we've done. So it's like,
yes,
there is some history there. And also, I've got this little music box that I wanted to just briefly bring up. I don't know whether this is audible for people if I hold it close to the microphone. Let me just, I'm not going to break it yet. I just want to wind it up a little bit. This is a classic German Christmas song. It's called Leise rieselt der Schnee. Quietly the snow is falling. And I'm just going to hold it to the microphone. It's literally a physical music box, and it sounds like this.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Isn't that a Christmas vibe?
It's very nice. And such a beautiful name for a song, I must say.
Yeah, this is something that, you know, when I was a child, I'm going to place it. It's going to stop at some point, I assume. I'm just going to place it. I'm just going to place it here. Okay, your little music box. It has like a chocolate factory on there. But yeah, as a child, it was always the case that when we were eagerly awaiting to open the presents, we needed to stand around the Christmas tree. You could see the presents there, but you first needed to sing at least one song, maybe two or three.
Well, that's so that was in the repertoire then, when yes. You would be waiting to open up the presents.
Leise rieselt der Schnee was definitely like a default. Yeah.
I don't know that we never sang songs, but our family tradition was, you know, the night before Santa would have come and left his presents. And so my mom in particular was very, very strict about, okay, you all need to, me and my brothers, we would sit on the staircase because just around the corner was the tree.
Mm.
And she would say, okay, I want you to sit on the staircase and come around the corner so that I can see your reaction. You can't come out until everything's ready. And so we'd be sitting there for a couple of minutes and just like, okay, is it time now? Is it time now?
Yeah, and this is in the morning, right? In the morning of the 25th.
Yes, yeah, Christmas morning.
Yeah, this is a fundamental difference because for all my life, I've been just accustomed to opening presents on the evening of the 24th. And I remember that, I think 2 or 3 years ago, I spent Christmas in the UK, and that was also the case. That was in the morning. And I found that kind of weird because it's like, I don't know, for me, the excitement on the 24th, on the evening, during Christmas dinner and so on, was always like that moment when you unpack presents or when you exchange presents by now that you're a bit older.
Yeah.
But in the morning, it was kind of like, yeah, okay, I just had breakfast. Okay, let's open the presents and then I'm going to go for a cigarette, you know?
Well, it was always funny for us too, because I can't remember when my parents instituted this rule, but at some point it was the rule that, okay, we're still going to do everything on Christmas morning, but nothing can happen until after 7 in the morning, because any time earlier than that is just ludicrous.
So yeah.
Let's all get some sleep, wake up and have a nice morning and then have some breakfast.
Ah, and then you're giddy as a child throughout the entire night and you think like, oh, tomorrow morning is the time.
Absolutely. It was, I don't know, looking back, I was probably only up until maybe like 10 o'clock in the evening, but it felt like I was up until 3 in the morning waiting for Christmas morning. So it was, I can see, you know, there's fun in both sides. A nice Christmas Eve evening. Everybody exchanging and having a nice time, then getting to, you know, spend the morning together. But there is something also pretty magical about, as a child especially, oh, Santa's coming tonight, and then in the morning we'll get to open everything.
Yeah, actually in Germany it's not even Santa that comes. Oh, by now I think probably, I'm not sure, I would be interested in how many people actually are visited by Santa. Like, you can let us know out there whether Santa, in Germany, if you live in Germany, whether Santa is coming to your place or what we call the Christkind. For me, it was always the Christkind, like the Christ child. And it was always like this kind of more invisible entity that didn't really have a physical form. And you would never really have some kind of imagination. There would not be like a tall, obese dude with a white beard. This is something that only came later, I think, as a cultural import, you could say.
Well, I figure now is as good a time as any, because there is some fun Christmas trivia, which you told me that, and I hadn't realized that I remembered somewhere in the recesses of my brain that Santa, the vision of Santa that we all have, as you say, like an obese man with a white beard, it actually comes from the Coca-Cola company.
Yeah.
So that depiction of Santa was used in, I think still is, along with the polar bears nowadays, in Christmas ads. And so that kind of image that we all have when we think of Santa Claus is a product of Coca-Cola.
Yeah, and we went so full circle just now, because now we're exactly at the point of commercialization. Well,
yes.
Of course, when I think of Christmas, even in Germany, even in Europe, you think of like this song of like, holidays are coming, holidays are coming. And this is also from a Coca-Cola advertisement, right? And, you know, the Coca-Cola truck that drives around the country and so on. They really own Christmas, like the Christmas aesthetics.
they really do. I think something about the colors that they choose, the red and white, maybe it's just inherently Christmassy, or maybe it's, I don't know, the 90 years of advertising that they've done.
Yeah. Yeah, really influenced it. Well, it just goes to show that, you know, advertisement and economics are very much strongly related with cultural iconography as well, and can change it profoundly.
It should be noted that when it comes to commercialization, this podcast has none of it.
That is correct. We do not have any advertisement, and the only way that we finance our show is by you, dear listeners out there, especially those that have already signed up for Studying Pixels Plus, because you do know that we have this Patreon program. It's $5 a month, and you get our gratitude, of course, you get a sticker, and you get monthly plus episodes. And we are super grateful for all of you who have signed up throughout the course of this year. Because starting with a project such as this, you might have noticed, if you go to studyingpixels.com, and I'm not sure whether people are aware of this, but there went a lot of effort and also quite a bit of money went into building this website. I'm really proud of our website. I think it looks really cool. And yes, it looks amazing on the phone, where you can like swipe through the episodes and so on. It's truly awesome. I'm really proud of it, if I may be so, you know, narcissistic about this.
You should be.
I've never built a website before, but I'm really happy with the results, and I hope so are you. And of course, we do need some funding in order to keep this project, well, going and growing, because we want to do more. We want to upgrade equipment. We want to storage all our stuff. We need to pay for a server in order to keep it running. And if you want to help us in doing that and you're not yet signed up, then you can go to studyingpixels.com/plus, where you can join our Patreon program. And in the meantime, we can move ahead and, well, actually look a little bit into next year, because the idea for this episode is strongly inspired by the Triple Click podcast. That's actually a podcast recommendation from me. It's one of my favorite shows. It's Jason Schreier, Kirk Hamilton, and Maddie Myers, formerly from Kotaku. They have the Kotaku Split Screen podcast, where they also did this, and now they're doing they went independent and they're doing Triple Click, and they do this thing where they exchange predictions. Always at the end of the year, they all bring predictions to the table, and then at the end of the next year, they see which of these predictions came true. And I've adopted this kind of for previous shows. See it less of, you know, it's not, I'm not stealing the idea. It's more like a tribute to the beauty of this idea. We also modified it a little bit, but generally the rules for this one are that Dan, you and me, we both bring 5 predictions. We do not know at this point what the other has predicted. These predictions must occur in 2022, not earlier, not later, and they must not be immediately obvious. Of course, you can predict that another FIFA game will come out, or there will be another Call of Duty game, and probably some kind of controversy revolving around Call of Duty, but this is not enough. It needs to be precise. Every correct prediction that we make, then we look back at it at the end of 2022, and every correct prediction awards 1 point. And if now in this episode we both agree that one of the predictions is particularly daring, particularly precise, or particularly unlikely, then we can award it 2 points as well. So basically, it is rewarded to be a little bit more daring in the predictions that we make. And at the end of next year, we're then going to look back, see which of these predictions came true, award ourselves the points. And whoever wins, whoever has the most points, gets to choose a game that the other then has to play, or that we both have to play together, I would say.
Yes, I think that, because that would be fun to have a follow-up episode where we talk about the game that the other had to play.
Yes, exactly. Then we'll do an episode where we play said game together, and we already have chosen our games, the games that we are going to make the other person play. Those are games that, you know, my game, I know you haven't played so far, Dan, and the other way around as well, I think.
Yes.
And I thought about which kind of game would I want Dan to play? Which kind of game would I want to do an episode on in which we discuss the content of this game? And I obviously had to choose one that I think is somewhat controversial, but also very interesting and rich as a material for analysis. And that is why I chose my favorite walking simulator, and that is Firewatch by Campo Santo.
Yes, I would be, I'll be honest with you, I would be happy to play that one. So it's not, I should said that this isn't, this isn't like a punishment game.
No.
where we're trying to make the other one's life miserable. Despite my choice, I should say that up front, despite what I'm, what I would choose.
Now I am scared.
So my choice would be Cyberpunk 2077.
Oh, Cyberpunk?
Yes.
That,
and that, I think
Cyberpunk
would be, that's the one. And I think, let me put it this way. I am of the opinion that any game that is that controversial is worth dissecting.
Mm.
So I think that we would have a really great time talking about our experience with that game, especially since it must be said that between now and then is a long time. And I would be interested to see what happens to Cyberpunk in between now and then.
Yes, I must say I'm also curious about that. And coincidentally, I didn't know this beforehand. This was not coordinated, but I do have a prediction regarding Cyberpunk 2077.
Let's get started.
So here's my very first prediction. Oh my God. So I predict that Cyberpunk 2077 finds a second, or rather first, wave of glory in 2022.
I could very easily see this happening. And I think you might get a point for this one, because I'm reminded of this whole thing reminded me so much of No Man's Sky and what happened with that game. And I don't know if CD Projekt Red is as dedicated as Hello Games was with No Man's Sky, but a year is a long time. And they've had a long time to kind of build on it. So I would be very curious to see what happens.
Yeah, me too. Because I think they had a disastrous launch, with probably the lowest point of that launch being Cyberpunk 2077 being pulled from the PlayStation Store for PlayStation 4 because it was just unplayable. And I think that throughout this year, throughout the remainder of this year, they have already shown that they are working on it, that they're fixing it, that they produce update after update after update. They basically pushed back all of the free content additions, the DLC that they wanted to put out. They pushed it all back in favor of fixing the game. And I think I trust CD Projekt Red quite a lot. Their games are generally pretty good, and they're also, they are quite known for launching in a state that is like not particularly polished, but as they've shown with The Witcher 3 as well, this is a game that had a long lifespan and that had a huge wave of glory after its launch, like a year after its launch. And I think that we'll see a similar thing. They'll make it happen. Basically, my assumption is, I want to be a little bit more precise than just, you know, saying that. I'm gonna say that the PlayStation 4 version will remain largely unplayable, that they will say, okay, PlayStation 4, okay, like, you know, we'll fix like the basic things, but they're not going to focus on it that much, because over the course of the next year, we'll see more and more people being able to adopt actual current gen consoles, right?
Yes.
So they're going to focus on that. They're going to focus on that and on the PC. And then once they've got the basics fixed, they're going to push out, as I assume, a whole bunch of free DLC, which will then get reported and picked up upon. And then people will think like, oh yeah, wait, Cyberpunk 2077, that I was excited about it and then it was such a disaster, but now it looks kind of cool. Maybe I can jump into it now. And then we'll see this wave of glory coming in. Maybe I would say around late spring, early summer next year, when we have a little bit of, you know, when the big releases are a bit more scattered, that will be the time for Cyberpunk 2077 to shine.
I have a feeling you're right. And, you know, more power to them if they're able to turn that around. So I think a solid prediction for 2022.
Oh, thank you very much. Okay.
Yes. Well, all right. So my first one, it's kind of cheeky, I guess, but it's we will not know the title of the Breath of the Wild sequel until days before its release.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
They've been very secretive. It's been referred to as the sequel to Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild for a very long time now. I have a feeling that the title of the game would be so explosive that they're not going to, you know, I don't know. It may be something like calling back to a previous game, maybe a Majora's reference or something. But I think that they're being very deliberate in not releasing the title, and I think we won't know it until very soon before its release.
So you don't think it's just going to be Breath of the Wild 2?
No, I think they've
it's
been
Nintendo,
so...
after all.
Yeah. They've been so deliberately secretive. I have a feeling that let me put it this way. If we knew it now, I think a lot of the twists would be kind of eaten up by people who are doing fan theories and stuff like that. So Nintendo, being very shrewd, is saying, you know what? We're going to keep this from you until the 11th hour. Then you'll know what the game is about.
Okay. I mean, on the one hand, I can see this happening. I'm going to just give my estimation just from what I know about it. I can see it happening, but I think it's going to be a little bit earlier than that. It might be, I could imagine that they reveal a title which is probably has Breath of the Wild somewhere in there, either at the front, or what I could also see them doing is putting Breath of the Wild at the back of the title, that it has some kind of other thing and Breath of the Wild is the subtitle.
Yeah, I think I have a feeling that it's going to have something to do with maybe like there's going to be something referring to Calamity in it. It's either going to be something very straightforward and it's just odd that they didn't release the title, or it's going to be very, very specific and it's going to get everybody's brains moving at what might be happening in that game.
Age of Calamity.
Well, they had that already.
That's
a good one, though.
Wasn't that a title of something already?
Yeah, Hyrule Warriors.
Hyrule Warriors, Age of Calamity. Yeah. Okay, too bad. I thought I could come up with it and then sue Nintendo for copyright infringement in case they take it.
Beating them at their own game.
Yes. Sorry, already trademarked it. Trademarked by Studying Pixels. Like, who are these guys?
Sorry, Uncle Nintendo.
Well, here's my number two. This ties into a story that has kept us, and I mean by that, the two of us and Studying Pixels as a team, but also the entirety of video game culture, quite busy and on our toes throughout the last couple of months. I'm talking about the events at Activision Blizzard.
Yes.
Now, here's my prediction. We do know that, there's quite a bit of trouble revolving around the CEO of Activision Blizzard, which is Bobby Kotick, and we know that there's a push that he shall resign.
Mm.
We also know that he does not want to do that. Like he says, he's going to look into the issues at Activision Blizzard and he's going to consider stepping down if he cannot fix the issues. Now, this obviously leaves him a lot of wiggle room. But my prediction is Bobby Kotick resigns his post at Activision Blizzard only because otherwise he would have been fired.
Mm. Interesting. Okay, so let's talk about this because I also have a prediction around Bobby Kotick.
Oh.
I think we will either both get a point or both lose a point because my prediction is that Bobby Kotick will step down from Activision Blizzard in June. I don't know why, but I'm thinking middle of the year in June after admitting he was not able to change the fundamental issues at the company.
Oh, okay. So I think June is definitely a possible time frame because we do know, and this is something that supports both of our predictions, that the lawsuits against Activision Blizzard are moving ahead and he's going to be implicated in these things. He's going to have to attend hearings. He's going to, you know, there's going to be a lot of stuff going on that also reveals things about Bobby Kotick and that falls back on his shoulders. So I think June might be a reasonable time frame. I do think, though, that he will not say that he was not able to fix it. But my assumption is he will get pressure from the shareholders. That's where I think where the push comes from. Shareholders at Activision Blizzard will realize over the course of the next year how strongly this issue is actually impacting them, especially since due to the lawsuit, there are going to be always more news stories. There's always new bits and
yeah, it's
pieces.
Not going anywhere.
It's not going anywhere anytime soon. And shareholders will get sick of that at a certain point. Yeah. Of people calling out Bobby Kotick and the CEOs of Activision Blizzard, and they will say, if we don't do anything about this, then we will actually lose a lot of money in the process. And they will say, Bobby, we know, you know, you're trying to do your best here or whatever, but you need to go. And he will say, like, no, I don't want to, you know, he will not want to leave. But because the shareholders will eventually say, well, you know, we can also force you out, then yeah. he will be like, okay, I did my best. I brought everything underway to improve everything. And now it's up to my successor. So thank you very much for all your attention. And I'll go play some golf.
Right. I think you're on the money. I think where we maybe differ is that I have a feeling that If it comes to that, if push comes to shove and he's given that ultimatum by the shareholders, I have this cynical idea that he will basically try to burn the bridge behind him by saying, I tried to fix these. Remember, I told you I would try to fix the issues. Well, I've tried and I don't think they're able to be fixed. So I'm out of here. Good luck with everything, right? I think that there may be an element of cynicism going into his departure.
That could be possible. I mean, there's certainly a lot of, you know, bad blood going on with behind closed doors that we just don't know about yet. I'm going to be very curious to see what happens. But I guess we can both say that, I mean, now it's a little bit complicated because the thing is, I can't get a point for that. Are you going to only get a point if he resigns in June?
I'll bite that bullet. Yes, I'll say June will be the time frame.
Okay, because you say June will be the time frame, then I'm going to propose the following. Because the time frame is so specific, I would like to give you 2 points for that prediction. If Bobby Kotick steps down in June 2022, then you would get 2 points.
Excellent. I'll take them.
And then I think, yeah, for me, probably I would only get a point if he resigns due to that pressure from the shareholders.
Yes, I think that's fair. And at any point in 2020.
At any point. That's why I shouldn't. Yep. That's why I think it's also fair that I don't get 2 points because my prediction is a lot more likely than yours to occur because it's of the time frame. So I'm good with just getting 1 point for this.
Good, good. All right, it's settled. Well, then on to my next prediction. So this is a bit more fun than Bobby Kotick and the Activision Blizzard debacle. But I think Guillermo del Toro and Hideo Kojima will announce that they are working on a new Silent Hill project together.
Again?
Yes. Because I have... So they're clearly very good friends, and there's been all this buzz about a new Silent Hill project that's going to be worked on outside of Konami. And the two of them... And maybe this is just how they talk with one another. I don't know. But the two of them have been very kind of saying, oh, you know, it'd be really great if a Silent Hill game was made. Oh, it'd be really nice if something like this would happen. Oh, I wonder if Guillermo del Toro will do anything. Oh, I wonder if Kojima-san will do anything. they've been very kind of coy about it. And so I think that there will be some kind of announcement on a Silent Hill project that will actually come together this year.
It could be possible because the thing is just they had something already. They were already there. They had it underway, and it was ruined, that idea, basically. But I mean, the idea, the concept still lingers, and I can't imagine creative minds such as those two basically just giving up on something that they were excited about.
No, and I think that we know that Kojima is such a big film buff, loves movies, and he's so friendly with Guillermo del Toro. And Guillermo del Toro... So once this episode goes out, the movie will have been released, a movie called Nightmare Alley. And it has a lot of Lovecraftian, Silent Hill-y kind of imagery in it. And I feel like they're not done with this idea.
Yeah. Yeah, they haven't dropped it yet. Do you think Norman Reedus will be in it?
Well, that's another, I mean, it seems like the three of them, I don't know if Norman Reedus is Kojima'd out after Death Stranding. I don't think he is. I think he's still really good friends with him. So, Yeah, I'll say I won't make that part of my prediction, but I will say that I think that he'll probably make an appearance if that were to happen.
It's fairly likely. If he doesn't play the leading role, that at least he does play some kind of role. And yeah. I also think if it is announced, it's fairly likely that it's produced by Sony, I would say.
Yes, I think so.
Like Sony as a publisher, Kojima Productions as developer.
I think so. I wonder too, like if it may be... Sony has some good experience with this, doing joint ventures with intellectual property, you know, because right now, so Spider-Man is the best example where Sony still has their grips on the Spider-Man IP, but Marvel, of course, also does. And so they come together to make those Spider-Man movies, which are huge successes. So I could see a world where Sony and Konami would come together and do something similar.
Sony and Konami?
I could see it. Yeah.
I guess so. I mean, the rights for Silent Hill are still with Konami, right?
I believe so. They're still selling merchandise and making slot machines in Japan.
Sony.
So.
I could imagine that Sony buys that franchise then.
Mm.
That Sony buys the licenses or something. Basically, buys Konami out because in order to really make a big push into. The department of Silent Hill, because we've seen the excitement revolving around, you know, Alan Wake 2 and so on, which was announced at this year's Game Awards. And psychological horror seems to be coming back in a strong way, especially in its cinematic form. And that's why I would assume it's fairly likely to happen. Yeah.
Yeah. So I hope that one's true because I have a lot of personal interest in it.
I would so play that. That would be amazing.
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Amazing. Right. What I'm a little bit more on the fence on is the Steam Deck. Because you may remember that throughout the course of this year, Valve announced the Steam Deck as this basically Switch kind of style, like Nintendo Switch style thing, but with the power of a PC hardware. You can use it in handheld and you can just plug it in and use it as basically as a docked PC. It's slotted to come out in February 22. And my prediction is that the Steam Deck will launch as planned in February 2022. it will develop a small following of early adopters who will be super excited about the Steam Deck, but unfortunately, it will quickly lose traction because most games on Steam are not optimized for handheld play, and people will just quickly realize, like, oh, okay, this is like a thing that's not really what I was looking for. So it will have a small following, but it will not become like a big major thing. That's my, it might be that I totally regret saying this next year, but that's my assumption when everyone has a Steam Deck in the living room.
Yeah, right.
My idea is not going to be, it's not going to be as big as it was hyped up at the beginning.
I have a feeling that you're right though. And my, I have no data to back this up. So this is, listeners, this is not a, an educated assumption here, but there's just a feeling that I get where people who are primarily PC gamers don't have a lot of overlap with console gamers and vice versa. And so if you're someone who, you know, plays primarily on a PlayStation or a Switch or an Xbox even, I feel like the barrier to entry for PC gaming is so high that I don't know that this, the Steam Deck is going to be able to get people over that. And even if it did, I think you're absolutely right, where not all Steam games are made to be played on a handheld system. And so people who would maybe otherwise be playing on a console may dip their toes into the Steam Deck and say, why don't I just play my Switch, my PlayStation?
Yeah, because that is exactly the thing. For example, it is totally possible to play a complex strategy game, also a game like Civilization or something. It's possible to play it in handheld mode. I could imagine, you know, I played Civilization on my iPad as well. That's how I actually started out playing Civ. I could also imagine things like Age of Empires and whatnot to be playable in handheld mode. But the thing is, if you want to do that, then it needs to be specifically optimized for that. You need a different kind of set of controls. You need the adjustment of the icons and so on. I'm not sure whether the Steam Deck can reliably deliver that, because it will just be, for most games, it will just be the default Steam version that you would get. And then you would notice, like, oh man, the writing is really small and it's like these icons and I can't, you know? And then something just doesn't run properly and so on. That's why I think it's going to have a small following, but it's not going to become a big thing. It's not going to play in the same league of the current consoles.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think there's a market for a lot of overlap there. But, you know,
who knows?
Maybe. I don't know. Maybe this will be the one that breaks through.
Yeah. What else have you got on your prediction list?
So on the subject of handheld gaming systems, I predict that there will be no Switch Pro or any other kind of next-gen Nintendo announcement. I think the OLED Switch is it for the time being.
Yeah, totally agree.
Yep.
Totally agree. Because if they wanted to do that, they would have done it already. Would have paired it with the OLED and would have said, now, and this is the Pro Switch or something.
Right.
But maybe it's just not, it's just once more a testimony to the fact that Nintendo is not running in the same direction as everyone else is, because for them it's like, well, you know, our games look like 2017, 2018, but who cares about that, you know? They're stylized. The Pokemon,
exactly.
You know, when you play Pokemon Sword and Shield or something, the games look cool. They're not like super high fidelity when it comes to technology, but they look cool. And I think that's the direction that they're heading. So, yeah.
I think so. And I think you hit the nail on the head with the stylized games that Nintendo puts out. Because even if you look at a game like Metroid Dread, which from all accounts looks fantastic on the OLED Switch, I feel like that's maybe the nicest that Nintendo wants something to look. You know, the highest fidelity or whatever you want to say. I don't think that they're very occupied with technical prowess. I think they've reached what they want. And I'm thinking about the new Kirby game that's coming out. That doesn't need to look like the latest Call of Duty.
Yeah.
It just needs to look like Kirby. So there's not a real push for it, I don't think, on Nintendo's side.
I think that's what they're doing. And it also has its advantages because, as you said, you know that the bar for what is possible when it comes to technical fidelity is relatively low with Nintendo. You know, you can't do like certain things like dynamic illuminations and all of these things like ray tracing, stuff like that.
Yeah, right.
It's just simply not possible. And because of that, I think Nintendo, if you develop a game for the Nintendo Switch, then you need to stand out with your graphical style, your visual style. You need to have one that is very much compatible with the technical limitations, and you focus on gameplay. And I think that's what they want to do. And then at a certain point, obviously, there's going to be a new console. Who knows what that will be? I assume it's going to be some kind of iteration of the Switch, but it's not going to be next year.
Right. And just as a last comment on this, we've said this before when we've discussed Nintendo, but it feels as though if you look at the past 40 years of Nintendo history, that everything was leading to the Switch. Every technical iteration, whether on the DS or on the Wii U, even the Virtua Boy, everything was going towards everything was going towards this beautiful little console that they've created. And I don't think it's kind of a, if it's not broke, don't fix it kind of mentality.
Yeah.
And I think that's fine.
Yeah, it's hardly imaginable for me that Nintendo would come out and would say, like, hey, this is now our standalone console. This is like a thing that you can't take on the go. That would make no sense, because they have a vast library now of games that you can play docked and on the go, so they really can't go back behind the Switch, yeah. I feel.
Yep, totally agree.
I also have a hardware prediction. Well, I had one already with the Steam Deck, but I have another one, and I think it's a fairly likely one, but I want to try and stand out with specifics with this one.
Okay.
So this one is about the PlayStation VR 2.
Okay.
Or whatever it may be called, but let's just, as a working title, say PlayStation VR 2, which will be released in 2020... Released in 2023, but it will be... You know, it will get all of its details announced. The marketing will kick off in the next year. It will be natively made with PlayStation 5 in mind, including like a, let's play, PS5 style look, just like, you know, the camera and the controllers and so on. Talking about the controllers, it will also have controllers that come with the haptic feedback functionalities of the DualSense controller, because that's just simply what makes sense for a virtual reality headset.
Yeah.
It's display, or the two displays that you have in the headset. That is going to be pretty powerful, but actually, if you run it in performance mode, then it's going to run at 1080p resolution with 60 FPS. So a little bit lower resolution, but a high frame rate. It can technically display up to 4K. Now, this is... You know, I'm getting very specific here now, as if I have the thing in my hands.
Yeah,
you're giving a pitch. I have it already. It's just how I imagine it. I imagine it can technically go up to 4K, but that would then, you know, take a drop on the frame rate, and that's something that you can choose to if you play in fidelity mode, in graphics mode. But if you play in performance mode, it's going to go up to 1080p. And the price tag will be... $349, and it will be released in 2023.
Well, the first thing I have to say is that I will absolutely award you 2 points if all of that comes true.
All of that needs to come true in order for me to get 2 points.
I do think that you're onto something, though, and I wonder, first of all, the haptic feedback idea is really exciting, because they've clearly, that's one of the coolest features of the PS5 and its controller is the haptic feedback. And you're right, it totally lends itself to the VR experience. And I think that it may be strategic for them to announce in 2022 that this is coming out as kind of further incentive to buy the PS5, especially since, as we've said in previous episodes, PS5s may be a little scarce even going into 2022. So to drum up the excitement to keep people thinking, you still need one, you still want to get one, check out this amazing VR experience that we're developing.
Yes, exactly.
I think you're right.
Check out the amazing VR experience, and then they're going to say, internally, they're going to discuss, okay, how expensive do we need to make this? And of course, they want to, they have several things that overlap. They want to make a very entry-level, consumer-friendly headset that's easy to use, easy to put on, plug and play, with a pretty low price tag. At the same time, obviously, they can't just, you know, sell it too cheaply, otherwise they would lose money. So my idea was they go just below the threshold of what an actual PS5 costs, like the digital edition. And that's why they go with $349, because if they make $399, then people are going to say, well, this is basically a standalone PS5.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous. So they're going to go a little bit lower so that in the messaging, they can say, you know, like nobody will criticize them for that.
Well, it's very particular, but I could see a lot of those components coming together in 2022 in an announcement. I think, yeah, it's especially depending on if Microsoft, like they've been kind of hinting, goes all out with IP, the PS5 is going to need something to draw people to it and away from the other systems. So VR is a likely candidate, I would say.
Yeah. Well, that was my second to last one, I think. Do you have one or two still left?
I have one left.
Okay, I'm very curious.
This one, this isn't quite the there will be a new FIFA game level, obvious, but I do feel like this is leaning more towards obvious. So I'm saying that Elden Ring will absolutely sweep the Game Awards in 2022 and will likely be talked about from its release until the end of the year.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
I don't know if we have to discuss this.
Yeah. Of course, there's like, you know, Geoff Keighley will make sure that Elden Ring.
Yes, he's win. In love with Elden Ring. I think so. The Game Award, we're recording this shortly after the Game Awards, and without sort of spoiling anything for you, Stefan, there is a moment in the Game Awards where it's like, oh yeah, Geoff Keighley is, I want to, almost in bed with this game at this point.
I think it was also originally announced at the Game Awards, right? Last year.
I believe,
was it teased or something, right?
I think it was teased originally with the very first sort of, trailer that they put out. So yeah, it's a long history of it. So I mean, obviously I think Elden Ring will do fine. It's a From Software game and it's already sold out in a lot of different versions, I'm pretty sure. But I specifically think that when the different categories at the Game Awards come up, Elden Ring will be in each one of them and it will win each one of them.
Wow. Okay. Well, let me think about this. I mean, Elden Ring wins Game of the Year. I think that is already... I mean, I do totally agree with you. I think it will be the talk of the town throughout the majority of the next year. Whether it will win the Game of the Year award largely depends on what else is going to come out. And that's why your prediction is a bit daring. It's not quite obvious, because we've also got things like, you know, God of War will also come out, Horizon, Forbidden West will come out. There are a couple of really high-profile games that have, at least from nowadays' perspective, the chance for a Game of the Year award. That's why I think there is a bit of risk involved in there.
Well, I as you're saying that, now I'm a little more on the fence than I was when I wrote that, because I forgot that God of War and also Breath of the Wild 2, whatever it's called, is supposedly will be out as well. So, yeah, we'll see. But I'm sticking to it.
Here's the deal. If you're willing to commit to the idea of saying Elden Ring will win Game of the Year award, and I would say that's totally possible, because that game is going to be great. And so far, From Software games have really ruled at the Game Awards.
Absolutely.
Then I would say that would be worth 2 points.
Then I will, for the sake of excitement, I will double down and say that yes, Elden Ring will win Game of the Year.
Wow, high stakes game here. Okay, so 2 points for that prediction, and here's my last one. You know how Netflix launched its gaming service this year in the US? It's not around in Germany yet, but I know that it launched in the US. I know it's also in other countries in the world it already started. My prediction is that Netflix is going to aim high, and it's going to remain largely insignificant. In the world of video games. Because the thing is, what they'll find themselves ending up with is a relatively small selection of games that ties to the IPs that they have, and maybe a little bit of a selection of unrelated games. But Netflix is not really that much associated with gaming at this point. And when people say, I want to play a video game on my phone or on my tablet or on my streaming stick or whatever, they are not going to turn to Netflix. And instead, they're going to, like, it's going to fade a little bit into the background. I'm not saying that there are not going to be any high-profile titles on there, but it's going to be just a relatively small blip in the wider domain of app stores and Google Play Store and so on.
I think that's probably right. And I could see a world where it remains in the background, but every now and again, there's like a promotional tie-in game that makes a splash. So we talked about how they launched it with the Stranger Things game, and I could absolutely see them, you know, say, for example, Squid Game Season 2 comes out, right? I could absolutely see them having something on the App Store, the Google Play Store,
yeah,
tying into, you know, the story of Squid Game. But I think that's probably, it'll be kind of background noise, like you're saying.
Yeah, it'll be relatively scattered throughout the year. And the big problem that they have is to sell gaming to an audience that is not necessarily focused on gaming. Like, people come to Netflix because they want to watch the great Netflix originals and like extensive high production value TV shows. But they are then, I assume that for most Netflix subscribers out there, they are going to ignore that games tab that appears, because it's just going to be like, I don't even want to play. Why do I have a video game subscription if I don't even play any video games, you know? And they maybe will try it out, but nobody has the time. You know, if you're not really playing video games, then you just open it up and you see like, oh, there's this. Okay, I'm moving on, you know?
I think that's right. It's not the same audience for somebody who just wants to sit on the couch and binge through an entire season of something. They're probably not going to invest their time in a video game.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, okay. So I honestly must say that I think after going through these predictions and hearing yours, your predictions are great. And I think that you will win, honestly. I think you'll win this.
Really?
One. Yeah.
I don't know. I doubled down on quite a few of them. There's some specific things that I could see. Yours are also great, and I could see a lot of yours coming true. And I had a vision of the future of next year of me as the calendar days, you know, flip by. Just one more of Stefan's. Another thing coming true.
I think it might be that I hope that some of mine are on point, but we'll see then. Imagine this, like head-to-head race, and at the end of the year, when the Game of the Year award is given out, and Elden Ring wins, and then it's like, boom, here's Cyberpunk 2077. Have fun playing.
Oh,
that.
Man. Yeah, well, I think either way, I would be excited for either of us to win, because both of those games sounds like we would have a great discussion about them.
Yeah, definitely. We're going to do an episode about them then, once we know who won the predictions for 2022. And yeah, this was our little cozy Christmas special. Shall I put on the music once more here? Oh my God, it starts playing already just before. I don't even have to pick it up in order to play it. Here, there's a music box a little bit.
Beautiful. Merry Christmas, everyone.
Merry Christmas, everyone. It was such a great thing to launch this podcast this year. It's really, I mentioned this already, but we also talk about this off air, obviously, but it's a great pleasure to podcast with you, Dan. It's absolutely amazing and so much fun.
Likewise, Stefan. I think I'm very, very pleased that we kind of happened upon one another in our previous endeavors. And this has been a great way to continue through the year and end the year. And I can't wait to see what 2022 brings us.
Thanks to all of you as well for listening, for supporting us on Studying Pixels Plus. But also, if you're just listening, you know, enjoy the rest of the year. Merry Christmas. And we'll see each other in January.
We'll see you then.
Bye-bye.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.